Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
We talked about Dr. Fauci's hearing quite a bit on the show yesterday. I want to get right back into that. This is a New Hampshire senator that I've never heard of defending Dr. Fauci.
It must be enormously frustrating to know that this hearing is designed to entrap you. It must be very frustrating for your attorneys to hear the chair's mischaracterization of the legal issues and posture that impact your decisions at the witness table today.
Well, the Republicans obviously with a different take on all that.
Americans haven't forgotten the tragic stories of people who lost loved ones during COVID, and those were denied a chance to say goodbye.
Countless families, including my own, watched a loved one die behind glass or through a screen.
You force people to watch their loved ones die alone over the phone. It's disgusting.
Do you have the dignity to just say you're sorry?
David Zweig is with us this afternoon. He's an investigative journalist. He wrote a great book called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, The Virus, and A Story of Bad Decisions. He's with us this afternoon. Hello, David. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me again.
You were one of the first people I thought about, and I just have to tell you, I don't know if I've done any help at all, but I push your book all the time, and I did this week because it's such an important piece of work, and you know I've recommended this to even some other, you know, hosts that they have you on because it's just important. Now, I don't see, this is one of those things that's really confusing to me, David, because this to me should not be a partisan issue. What happened to this country, what happened to kids, what happened to a lot of people with the masking, the, you know, the vaccine, the promises of the vaccine, all this stuff. You wrote about all this in the book. So your reaction to what happened yesterday?
Well, you know, unfortunately, this was expected that he was going to take the fifth, you know, and probably wise for him from a legal standpoint. But it's unfortunate for the public to not hear him give his responses to the questions from the senator. So it's one of those things where, you know, I get it for why he did it. But it's not really helpful to the American people.
One of the things that I know that you first, you know, started going down the road of is, and we talked about this quite a bit yesterday in the aftermath of the hearing, was COVID in kids and how it affected kids and, you know, how kids, and my daughter was one of them in kindergarten, had to wear masks. I've stated this several times in Missouri, David, very lucky compared to other states, but still, my daughter was wearing masks into the first grade, right? And when you started down this COVID rabbit hole, you were really finding that the evidence was pretty strong that children were basically not even affected by this virus.
That's right. And from the very beginning, in March, I went along with everything and I had no particular reason to be skeptical, you know, necessarily about what was going on. But what I found very quickly was that the public health officials, along with most of the legacy media, was not really giving much information. They were sort of the media was acting more like an amplifier rather than a filter for information. And that's not what they're supposed to be doing. And I'm just north of New York City. And in the middle of April, cases began to drop off of a cliff. And that was after the expiration of, you know, the 15 days to slow the spread. And instead of them, you know, stopping after 15 days, as you surely remember, they added another 30 days. And that's when, for me, everything went awry was, well, wait a minute. We were told it's 15 days. We did it. We've slowed the spread, at least certainly in a hot spot like New York City. Cases are, you know, you can look at a graph. Anyone can pull it up. Cases just start going down on like a, you know, 45 degree angle. Why aren't they reopening the schools? And that's what set me on my path, because as far as I could see, no one was talking about this. And it just made no sense to me. And I'll tag one thing onto that, which is you're asking me, you know, with kids and the harm to them. There was a very important meeting that occurred in Europe in May. And almost no one knows about it, but what they discuss in this meeting could have and should have changed the course of the pandemic in the United States. And it is 22 countries in Europe began reopening their schools at the end of April and the beginning of May. The education ministers from all those nearly two dozen countries met, you know, virtually in the EU, and they said, we have observed no negative consequences of reopening schools. They met a second time in June and had the same determination. This was basically blacked out from the United States media. And that is what should have changed the course of action here. We had evidence. Millions of children were already in school in Europe. And here in the United States, the New York Times and Anthony Fauci and everyone else was pretending as if there was no evidence of this, that we didn't know what would happen when schools would reopen.
It's outrageous. And I was very aggressive in calling for the schools to be open in the aftermath of that as the summer went through. And this is when teachers were saying, holding signs up there, and Randy Weingarten was saying, you're going to kill our teachers, when the evidence was exactly the contrary. And I was encouraging publicly and privately my superintendent in the Rockwood schools at the time, who was a pretty good guy. I'm like, look, here's the Mark Reardon plan. You get these young kids in particular back in school right now. I was even given a little leeway on the high school stuff, you know, maybe just to wait and see. But even under those circumstances, and maybe those kids were damaged the most, they missed proms, they missed homecomings. It took us too long. Now, in Missouri, it didn't take as long. We were lucky. Where you were, though, it took like 2 years, right?
It was really bad. Yeah, in New York, things, you know, and it varied from district to district. But kids did not get back to full-time school for a very, very long time. And when you look at places like California and pockets of Virginia and Maryland, there were kids who did not step foot into a school building for well over a year, some of them even close to 2 years. That is such a radical moment in American history that, to my mind, even though I wrote like a 500-page book on this, I don't think this has been reckoned with or discussed nearly enough in the public for something so extraordinary, where you had healthy children prevented from what we've always been told my whole life. I assume you knew this too, Mark, which is we were told this is a right. Education is a right, you know, for every American child. Well, that right was taken away from millions of healthy kids. And there was, and let's be clear, there was no benefit. I've done all the research. I have hundreds and hundreds of endnotes in my book with links to studies and all of the data. There is no evidence that school closures over a long term saved any lives or had any benefit.
You know, one of the things that you pointed out, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but you mentioned Mike DeWine, who was the governor of Ohio. He actually mentioned St. Louis in the early part of this pandemic because of what happened with the flu in 1918, right? Because we did things differently here in St. Louis that were more extreme than other cities, I think.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, the St. Louis versus Philadelphia example. This was a big thing that DeWine and many others were pointing out. And what happened was they showed that if they would show this graph saying if everyone locks down completely, that will help blunt the, you know, the amount of cases. And they showed that in 1918, there's this graph where if you compare St. Louis versus Philadelphia, that if you lock down early, one city saved a lot of people and the other one had many more deaths. What they don't show and what they don't talk about, and I talk about this in the book, is that there is a guy, Robert Barrow, who did a study on this. He's an economist. I forget the name of the organization he's with, but he did an extensive study on this. And once you look at all of the different cities in America over time, there was no correlation at all between the duration of the school closures and ultimately the number of deaths in a particular city. Like everyone sort of forgot the last chapter of the story. So things can be very compelling and you have this visualization that gets everyone, you know, all wound up and thinking that they're being virtuous and this is what we need to do. But cooler heads did not prevail. There was a plan. We've had all sorts of sort of like guidebooks within the CDC and other agencies on how to handle a pandemic. And very quickly, Anthony Fauci and others immediately went off script and just started, you know, they just were calling audibles every day on this thing.
Well, we've learned
that,
yes.
Say, Yeah, when people say we didn't know, they did the best they could with the information at the time, that is not true. And one of the most important things I tried to do with my book and just in, you know, in my general reporting on this topic is to really put that myth to rest. And I think it's important for all of us to understand that history. So hopefully we can avoid something like this happening again, whether it's a pandemic or some other inevitable crisis.
And that's why I think it's important as well. And your book is called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, the Virus, and a Story of Bad Decisions. Why is it, this is still kind of, I think I mentioned this at the beginning, but why is there such resistance on the part of so many people on the left? Look, they're still out there praising Dr. Fauci as an American hero. He saved lives. And I've admitted, David, look, the early part of that pandemic was confusing. March, April, we didn't know exactly what we were looking at. But like you just indicated, we knew some things pretty quickly that were not shared. But why is there such resistance, and why is this a partisan issue? That just baffles me.
Yeah, well, you know, you hit on it there. Unfortunately, things became coded politically, either, you know, red or blue. And once something was coded in that manner, it didn't matter what evidence, what information. And I think that political branding on certain people or certain topics, it appears to be permanent. And there is some section of the population, there literally is nothing that could be said about Anthony Fauci or some other topics related to the pandemic that would ever change their mind. It just doesn't matter. So it's very unfortunate, and I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I think the only thing we can do is at least try to get the information out there about what really happened. And I think there clearly is some portion of the population who are not locked in to their, you know, political tribe. And those are the people who you try to reach. And I think there's some evidence. I've been seeing people writing about it and other people contacting me who are pretty far left, who even this latest thing with Fauci pleading the fifth, seeing the stuff from the diary, seeing his duplicity, seeing how he lied to the public in a whole variety of ways, I think that it is breaking that dam a little bit, at least for some soft middle of the population, and that's really valuable.
So that's great to hear. You know, I will tell you, maybe I've told you this before, just because I think it would be an awesome experience for students, but I recommended to the dean of the journalism school at my alma mater, the University of Missouri, his name is David Kirpius, to have you come to campus and to explain what the media did during all of this, because it's really shameful. And I think people, now he would not take me up on that offer. I thought, you know, I bet David would come to Columbia and maybe do a speech. I just think some of the lessons in your book, and you know I'm a huge fan. So thank you so much for coming on here. Keep the fight up, and we really appreciate it.
Well, it's so kind of you to say, Mark, and it's great talking with you.
Thank appreciate you very it. Much. That's David.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.